The past few years haven't been easy for anyone, but private debt managers can't complain all that much. According to the Fed, total private credit has grown exponentially, reaching $1.7 trillion last year. It's now comparable to leveraged loans and high-yield bond markets, and some projections peg the asset class as high as $2.7 trillion by 2027. However, macroeconomic conditions remain in flux, with big questions around inflation, rates, and the syndicated market, which is showing signs of life these days. I'm Rob Kotecki, and in this episode, sponsored by the Credit Investments Group in UBS Asset Management, formerly known as Credit Suisse Asset Management, I'll be speaking with two veteran dealmakers. Kevin Lowy, the private credit portfolio manager and head of origination within the Credit Investments Group, along with his colleague on the public side, David Mecklen, a member of the Corporate Credit Committee and U.S. portfolio manager. We'll focus on diagnosing the current state of play for both public and private debt, where the opportunities and risks are, as well as explore what the future of this market looks like. Kevin kicks us off by discussing the landscape for private credit right now.
In a way, we're back to an environment we saw in 2021 when credit spreads were tighter. Today, we're looking at private credit deals in and around the S500 context. And the syndicated markets are functioning again. And they are now competing for deals with the private credit market in a very similar way that we saw back in 2021. If we look back at the last 3 years, you see 2021 as an example of a well-functioning market where private credit and the syndicated markets were competing for deals and credit spreads were tight. And then, of course, in 2022 and for most of 2023, we saw a period of dislocation in the markets. That has now normalized, and it's in a way back to where we were in 2021. So I think you'll see a few themes emerge in the next year or so. You might see a return of more junior capital deals come to our market as the syndicated market perhaps does a first lien with a junior privately placed second lien. You also will continue to see unitranches, but you might see fewer of the large multi-billion dollar unitranches we saw for the last 18 months. Those large unitranches were a result of one, dislocated syndicated markets that couldn't support those transactions because the banks weren't underwriting risk. And they were also a result of large capital structures that needed to find a home in private credit for either ratings or capacity constraint reasons. You will continue to see unitranches get done in private markets for more traditional reasons, such as access to a delayed draw, or a management or a sponsor team's comfort with the direct lending market versus the syndicated market.
And how are you responding to that sort of new normal that we've established, Kevin?
I think you have to have a different playbook for different types of markets. So when the syndicated markets were not functioning as well, we were doing larger unitranches. We were doing non-fungible add-ons. Now we're looking at junior capital deals again and also doing just smaller unitranches and add-on M&A for existing borrowers.
David Mecklen notes that while private credit stepped into the gap left by a slowdown in the syndicated market, the recovery of that market doesn't necessarily mean that private credit will shrink to its previous levels because the story is a little more complicated. Here's David with his diagnosis of what happened over the last few years.
I think a lot of that was cyclical. A lot of that was secular. The cyclical tailwinds for private last year was really about the pullback in the syndicated markets. They were not functioning. M&A was slow. And when it was happening, folks were looking for certain and direct and quick and clear execution that the private markets can provide. And that was really a cyclical benefit, a cyclical growth that does not take away from the secular changes that we are seeing, from the secular expansion, I'll say, that we're seeing, which is capital markets teams, private equity firms are looking at public markets and they're looking at private markets. 2023, they looked a whole lot more at the private markets because it suited what they were looking to do a lot more and it fit their execution priorities a lot better. The syndicated market is functioning better today. It is more active. It is providing better solutions than it did a year ago. So that does offset some of that cyclical share shift, we'll say, in the private markets.
But David makes it clear only some of private credit's recent runaway growth will be impacted by syndicated markets working again.
That does very little, though, to limit the secular tailwinds around private credit and why we're seeing activity in now both parts of the market. I think where we see the need for private credit or where private credit can really provide a differentiated solution, that might be delayed draw financing, might be partial PIK terms. It might be the ability to do preferred equity or holdco in unique situations that are attractive. I think you'll see more of that evolution for more your traditional buyout public credit with a high yield or a loan solution. We're seeing a reversion back to that market, but that doesn't take us off this course that we're on, which is secular growth in private markets.
However, that course also includes a rate environment that may be historically low, but certainly higher than it's been in decades. What does the rate environment mean for lenders? Here's David's perspective.
The rate environment clearly has an impact on companies. The cost of financing, the valuations for their own businesses, it certainly has an impact. But I would say it's not all that impactful to outcomes. And what I mean by that is a good company that is performing, it will have a valuation that supports the credit, whether we have rates at 5% or we have rates at 3%, or if we have, you know, where rates were even a couple of years ago at closer to zero. If you have a company that's performing well, it can generate cash in good times, in higher rate environments, in lower rate environments. And so fundamentally, I don't believe that it's going to have material impacts to outcomes. It has impacts to sentiment. It has impacts to comfort levels. It has impacts to things like the M&A environment that we were talking about. Maybe it takes longer for that sponsor to exit that company. Perhaps yes, perhaps not, right? And there's certain impacts that will happen. But in terms of, you know, outcomes, I don't know that the rate environment really, given the rate bands that we're talking about and that we're seeing, will have a material impact on outcomes. I think what you will see, I think we've started to see this, and what you will see is that challenged companies broadly in credit markets will see an acceleration, right? Certainly a higher rate environment will accelerate outcomes, will accelerate negative situations to the extent that they are occurring in pockets of the market. They won't necessarily create bad outcomes, but they will accelerate them in those instances. And so I do think you might see a bunching of defaults, whether that's in private markets or in public markets, you know, around the default rate levels that we've seen recently, as interest rates put pressure on underperforming credit. But for performing credit, for companies that fundamentally have good market positions, good performance, good business models, the rate environment itself, we don't think is a determining factor.
I agree. I think that the ultimate test of an investor is to pick good credits, right? And rates are a double-edged sword. A high base rate environment means absolute yields in our asset class are higher. We've seen first lien credit spreads and overall yields approach 12-13% at their peak. Clearly, that is a large amount of excess return relative to historical norms. Now, what is the implied default rate in that number? That's a big question, right? Because as companies need to address this higher rate environment, there will be a higher level of defaults. A lot of those poor business models will begin to see some cracks. So I would say it's a double-edged sword. You are getting paid, in a sense, for the increased risk in the market, and that's being reflected in these higher absolute yields. But at the end of the day, it's going to be the test of a credit manager to pick and credit select good performing businesses that will enable that manager and investor to keep as much of that excess return as they can.
All right, but that raises the question, where are they finding those opportunities? Where are the good performing businesses that David and Kevin feel will make the rate environment irrelevant?
As a general matter, we prefer the upper middle market because, one, that is where our strengths as an institution lie. That's where our relationships with sponsors lie. We're also more comfortable from a credit profile lending to bigger businesses. Bigger businesses, we feel, will be able to withstand macroeconomic cycles better than smaller businesses. Now, that's just kind of as at a high level. At a more kind of specific level to the recent market, we've seen an interesting trend emerge because, as David was mentioning, we've seen a slowdown in M&A activity over the last 2 years, 18 months. You've seen a lack of sponsor-to-sponsor sales. That, in our opinion, has affected the lower middle market to a much larger extent than the upper middle market. Because of a slowdown in deal activity, the origination and exit opportunity for lower middle market companies has deteriorated to some extent at a more, I'd say, rapid pace than what we've seen in the upper middle market. In the upper middle market, you have more optionality in terms of new deal originations and exit opportunities. As an example, in the upper middle market, we saw a trend over the last 18 months to do larger financings with companies exiting the syndicated markets and going to the private credit markets. Those companies were upper middle market borrowers. That will mean revert and that will go back as the syndicated markets get healthy again. But it's one example of an increase of originations in the upper middle market in the last 18 months. Another example is this idea of non-fungible add-ons, whereby syndicated issuers were issuing illiquid tranches in their capital structure to private credit lenders. Again, that was a source of origination for the upper middle market. Conversely, on the exit, we've seen borrowers in our portfolio exit our capital structures and do takeouts with high-yield bonds, as an example. And that provides some optionality in terms of realizing returns in the upper middle market, where I don't think you see that in the lower middle market.
Of course, there are lenders that, due to their experience and expertise, are able to find those diamonds in the rough way down in the lower middle market. But another factor we can't ignore is that slowdown in M&A activity. What does that mean for credit providers? Here's David.
The M&A environment is just simply slower today than it had been in prior years. We're seeing a very challenging, I'll say, buyer-seller mismatch on valuations. And that will get solved. I mean, these tend to happen in periods of volatility. 2022 and 2023 are cases in point to that playing out. I think as we see 2024 and we see stabilization take hold here, we do think that M&A can pick up, with the caveat that we're in an election year with plenty of geopolitical events to focus on. So there's plenty of caveats to throw in there. But M&A has been slower. And what that just means is there's fewer M&A financing opportunities. It means your realizations are probably slower from an organic perspective, from a company getting sold, repaying their debt, and re-levering up if it's a new sponsor, but generally slower. I think where, though, we've started to see a pickup is, given the M&A environment broadly for new investments is slower, we are seeing companies look for financing internally. And what I mean by that is their portfolio companies. So whether it's on the private credit side, whether it's on the syndicated side, whether it's on the high yield side, I think we're seeing sponsors and we're seeing borrowers focus on their businesses and focus maybe on M&A within those businesses. That's a higher value M&A financing opportunity today. These are generally borrowers we know. We're seeing lots of opportunities for tack-on, for fungible, non-fungible financing opportunities. And so I think what we're seeing is we're seeing the market pivot. We're seeing the market adjust to this M&A environment. We do think it will pick back up. We think it takes some time. It takes some period of stabilization. And as M&A picks up, as leveraged buyout financing picks up, we will see that financing take place. In the meantime, we're seeing a lot of this tack-on financing.
Kevin, to that point, what has that meant in terms of how you source or how you approach or how you think about providing credit for some of that more internal M&A and some of those projects that are internal within the portfolio company instead of sort of going out there and doing a typical roll-up platform play?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I mean, look, some of our most robust origination comes from our internal portfolio, right? And that's the advantage of being a lender to a business, growing with that company, helping it support additional financing needs. I think half of our private credit portfolio at this point has come from businesses where we were a pre-existing lender to. Sometimes that takes the form of a business that we own on the private side, and often it takes the form of a business that we have a relationship with on the public side. Because we're such a large lender on the syndicated side, that throws off a lot of opportunity to finance management companies that we're comfortable with, sponsors that we know, and businesses that we like. So the best type of origination often comes from businesses that we're already involved in, incumbent positions. We can control the documentation. We can control our allocation a little bit better in those types of situations. And that's a great example of some of our best origination opportunities. I wouldn't say it makes us, you know, totally at ease, right? We're always looking at how the businesses have changed. Are they buying a new business? What does that do to the operational profile of the business? How does that change things? But certainly there's an increased level of comfort putting more dollars behind an investment that has kind of already looking to be working out well.
And if I can add, this environment, the slower M&A environment, actually is incredibly strong opportunity to engage with the sponsors we work with in terms of providing them solutions that fit their current needs. So they might not be ready, they might not be able to exit an investment today, but as they look for financing out 1 or 2 years, they look for recapitalizations, they look for bridges to exits, these are the sorts of opportunities that you can generate in a slower M&A environment. You can pivot away from doing your traditional new LBO unitranche, which we are certainly looking at, whether that's a private or a syndicated deal. There are deals like that coming, but it really is an interesting opportunity to engage with sponsors on where we can be helpful to create interesting investment opportunities for our investors, but also engage with these borrowers over time.
And I think from the other side, from the sponsor, right, they really appreciate that partnership approach, right? So when we can support a sponsor through multiple phases of growth, that really allows the sponsor and us to have a very productive relationship, leads to more origination, more deal flow, and increases the pipeline of opportunities that we look at.
That's a sunny picture, but there are big questions lingering about what the next few years will bring, especially after this sustained period of geopolitical and macroeconomic instability. I won't hold them to it, but this is how Kevin and David see the next 1 to 3 years.
Yeah, look, I think there's definitely been some pent-up demand, as we've noted on the M&A side, right? Sponsors are in the business of buying and selling companies, and that has been put on pause for the last 18 to 24 months. So we do think that in the next year to 2 years, there will be a resumption in activity. That'll lead to greater originations for private credit. I think there is more conviction on the part of some of our LPs that private credit is an asset class that is here to stay. You know, it's been performing well now through multiple cycles or for multiple periods of time. I think there will be increased interest in the asset class from institutions, and there will be origination volumes and opportunities to deploy that capital as M&A picks back up. I think that maturities will also be a focus, and you will continue to see weaker borrowers try to address their capital structures. That'll create opportunities for private credit in both junior opportunities, but also senior opportunities as capital structures are refinanced. So I think the asset class is clearly maturing, and there will be lots of opportunities to both raise and deploy capital over the next couple of years.
I think this year is actually going to be pretty exciting to see it develop, because I think despite the slower M&A environment, we're now at a point where if you were to draw a Venn diagram of the syndicated market and the private credit market, there is as much overlap as there's ever been. And I think it's exciting to see it play out, because I think it's very compelling for us, for our investors, and for our borrowers, for the private equity firms, for the companies that we lend to out of the portfolios, to see this overlap. I mean, you're always going to have companies that really will naturally sit in the private credit market. You know, I think of ARR loans as an example of that. That will remain. We don't see that merging. That will remain a private credit opportunity. There will always be borrowers on the higher rated end of the spectrum, public companies, et cetera, that will lean to the syndicated market. But that overlap that we see in the two markets is as strong as it's ever been. The activity that we've already seen in 2024 on the syndicated side that start to prove out this overlap. So when we think about it from an opportunity perspective, we just think it's very big. It's very broad. As a credit manager, you want to pick good credits. You want a very broad set of credits to pick from. And because of this overlap, I think this is the broadest set of opportunity, despite a slow M&A environment. It is one of the broadest sets of opportunities we'll see across credit markets. And I think we're seeing that continue. And to the extent and when M&A really returns in fuller force, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting opportunities to engage on.
I would also just comment on that sponsors are looking at both markets now together. Right? They are looking, and they're looking for institutions that can price risk across a continuum, whether it's high yield, loans, private or public. And the value that a firm like ours can bring to sponsors able to price risk across that spectrum of alternatives is even more valued today than it was in the past.
To Kevin, that competitive advantage from offering both public and private credit products will only increase.
Sponsors are looking for a one-stop shop. In a world where there are lots of direct lenders out there, lots of public market participants, broadly syndicated players, sponsors are looking to focus and have fewer counterparties with which to deal with. They want to have a one-stop shop with trusted counterparties that can finance their businesses across multiple different products, whether it's high-yield loans, public or private credit. So being able to offer those solutions to sponsors really helps from a relationship building and origination perspective. On the other hand, it makes us smarter investors. We look at sectors, whether it's building products or insurance brokerage or healthcare, and having access to information is key. Lending to businesses across those industries, whether it's in the public and private markets, makes us smarter investors when we're looking at an individual company. Maybe we're lending to a supplier or a customer as well, or a competitor. And that enables us to be smarter investors. It enhances our diligence process, our ability to talk to management teams in a sector, and ultimately drives better outcomes for our investors.
That again was Kevin Lowy and David Mecklen of the Credit Investments Group at UBS Asset Management. This episode was produced by Mina Tumai and edited by Eric Fish. I'm Rob Kutecki with PEI Group. Thanks for listening.